First presenter. My name is Breton Sherrod. I'm a soil scientist at the Land Management and Water Conservation Research Unit out of Pullman, Washington. And in the Pacific Northwest region, particularly in the Columbia Plateau, we experience exceedances of the PM10 standard in that region due to wind-blown dust. And such scenes as this you see here, where you have particulate matter in the atmosphere, are not uncommon for that region of the U.S. The Columbia Plateau, it's about a 75,000 square mile region, mainly within the eastern part of Washington State, extending actually into northern Oregon and into western Idaho. The plateau, there's a very steep precipitation gradient due to the Cascade Mountain Range being on the western side of the plateau, and the annual rainfall increases from about 5 inches per year up to about 20 inches per year on the eastern edge. This dust storm occurred back in October 4th, 2009, and the area that's depicted is indicated by this yellow square. But these kind of dust storms do affect air quality, affect visibility. There's been occasions actually where the interstate systems in Washington State have been shut down due to blowing dust. There's been traffic fatalities. But what really drives our research is the effect of these dust storms on air quality in the region. So when you talk about air quality, this is Pullman, Washington, looking out towards the west or towards the ocean, which is roughly about 250 miles from our community. But this is a very nice, clear day, and you can see here that this is a day where we exceed the air quality standard due to blowing dust. The air quality standard is 150 microns. Per cubic meter over a 24-hour period, and here we're at about 500, so we exceed that that air quality threshold by about 3 times. So in regards to the exceedance of the National Ambient Air Quality Standard for PM10, this data comes out of Kennewick, Washington, which is located right at the confluence of the Snake River and the Columbia River. Right on the Washington-Oregon border. But you can see over the last, nearly 20 years, there are some years where we exceed the standard, some years where we simply do not exceed the standard. Of course, climate has a lot to do with this, but also the way our soils are managed and farmed have a lot to do with exceedance of the standard as well. So just to review in terms of some of the factors that influence dust within our region, well, certainly you can't have wind-blown dust without wind. We generally have high winds in the spring and in the fall of the year when our systems seem to transition to more zonal flow across the region. Precipitation, again, is a driving factor due to our semi-arid or arid conditions. Our soils are certainly a factor because of the wind-blown or lessile material, and then also our cropping systems. So in regards to precipitation, again, our precipitation generally in the drier parts of the plateau, we have about 5 inches of precip, mainly irrigated agriculture, which is still a source of wind-blown dust. And we have a precipitation gradient going from west to east across this region of about 1 inch per 10 miles. So fairly large, steep precipitation gradient across the region. The problematic area really is in this, within this region of a 5 to about a 12 inch rainfall annual precipitation area. Soils are a factor in terms of wind-blown dust, and this illustrates the silt content using a GIS technology in regards to mapping silt content of various soil types across the 8-state region. And you can see in the Pacific Northwest, in this Columbia Plateau, our soils generally are at 80% silt content. But we also find high silt contents down here in the Snake River Valley too, where we also experience wind-blown dust. The cropping systems that affect wind-blown dust emissions are predominantly the wheat fallow rotations. Here, this picture is from an area that shows the broad expanse of the plateau, taken in late autumn, where we have winter wheat emerging, and the grower on the other side of this of the road is just starting to cultivate his field. With regard to conventional fallow, this is a 13-month fallow operation, where generally after harvest he'll come in and either disc or sweep his land. Then he'll rod weed this, usually about a half a dozen times to control weeds. The main point behind this fallow system is really in terms of soil water conservation, to be able to enable the grower to seed into a soil that hasn't received any precipitation since the spring of the year. So, the objective of my study is really in terms of, well, what is the characteristic of this wind-blown dust that's emitted during these high wind events? And the whole premise behind this is in regards to trying to understand the processes by which soil is emitted during these wind storms, and that would allow us to better simulate wind erosion processes, but also in terms of developing management techniques to minimize wind-blown dust emissions. So these are our experimental sites. We've been monitoring wind-blown dust emissions on a field scale since about 1993 in the region. I picked a number of years where we've been monitoring field scale wind-blown dust events from 1999 to 2006. And these are the locations of those experimental sites. Generally speaking, this is what an experimental site looks like. Basically, we've tried to find a fallow field that's isolated so that the wind actually would be coming from this direction going across our field that's predominantly a southwest direction. We like to have these fields isolated so that the upwind area, which would be this here, is either in some sort of stubble or crop residue or CRP. And that ensures that anything that we receive in our sensors, these are our sampling sites here, actually result from erosion of this landscape or this fallow field. And this is just illustrates the bank of type of samplers that we use at our downwind field site. We have a number of air quality samplers here measuring PM10, what's called high vol, and an e-sampler. The e-sampler measures in real time. The high volume sampler measures on event basis. But also we use passive samplers to collect dust at various heights above the soil surface. And also a creep sampler that measures or captures the material that actually rolls upon the soil surface. So we've collected the in-situ samples before, and BSNE and creep samples after a high wind event. We dry those samples at 30 degrees C. In most cases, we don't have to do this because they're already air dried out in the field, but oftentimes these high wind events occur with some sort of precipitation. We sieve the samples into less than 10 micron, 11 to 32, 33 to 45, 46 to 100, and greater than 100 micron size fractions using a sonic sieve apparatus. And then we also correct for the sampling efficiency of these BSNE samplers, and we do that using our portable wind tunnel, where we know how much of these size fractions enter the BSNE. We collect what is in the BSNE, determine the sampling efficiency. So in regards to some of the results over the past couple of years in regards to our size fraction of soil we're seeing during these high wind events, the S here indicates our field soil or the soil sample that's taken in situ in the field just before the high wind event. And this is the erodible fraction. And so you'll see that generally from about 50 or 60 to 80% of our erodible fraction is approximately greater than 46 microns in size and diameter. And I guess the important point here to note is that as you move away from the soil surface, so this is the creep sample, this is at 0.1 meter height going up to 1.5 meter height, that it becomes more dissimilar from the parent material itself. And even at this height here at 1.5 meters, we're finding generally about 60% of our material being composed of about greater or less than 32 micron diameter material. So as we go up in height, our particulate matter is fining in size. And this illustrates, this is all the data combined across years. And for the larger soil particles, which is the 100 micron size particle and the 46 to 100 micron size particle, if we carry these trends down towards the soil surface, if we included creep, we'll find that actually the mass fraction of these larger soil particles actually increases towards the soil surface. Then if you look at the finer size fraction of our material, which is the 11 to 32 micron fraction, as well as the PM10 or the less than 10 micron fraction, if we looked at the creep fraction, we'd see that it actually decreases towards the soil surface. So it's almost the inflection of the larger size micron material. And then also of curiosity is this 33 to 45 micron fraction. If you looked at what the creep is composed of, that there's no trend at all, that the mass fraction of this size material actually is the same throughout the whole profile. And this illustrates basically different type of processes that influence erosion on our region. For the larger size material, where we have this increase in mass fraction towards the soil surface, it's really a reflection of saltation processes that occur at the soil surface or near the soil surface. But for our finer size material, for this less than 32 micron fraction, the decrease in the mass fraction towards the soil surface really indicates more of a suspension type of processes for these finer size materials. And then for this 33 to 45 micron fraction, since there's no variation in mass fraction with height, at least we believe that this is remnant of both saltation and suspension type of processes. As far as the geometric diameter as a function of height, we find that our diameters as a function of height are have a lot more abrupt transition than in other areas, for example, like the high plains of Texas. Basically, the mean diameter is pretty constant with height of above 0.1 to 0.2 meters in height, indicating that that these size particles, which are predominantly 32 micron in size, are influenced more by turbulent processes within the atmosphere. But it's really this region here where we have this sharp gradient in terms of diameter or particle size diameters that really indicate that we still do have a saltation process driving erosion right at the soil surface or near the soil surface. in our previous work, we indicated that suspension was a predominant process by which the soils erode in the Columbia Plateau. But this just illustrates evidence that indeed we do have saltation processes that still do occur. So in conclusion, we find that the windblown sediment has a mean diameter of 11 to 32 microns in size, which is much finer than the erodible soil fraction. The primary transport mechanisms we've identified as saltation for the greater than 45 micron fraction and the suspension for sediment that's less than 32 micron in fraction. And this supports work of people such as Gossin in Australia, who found essentially the same response in terms of these transport mechanisms. And then also in regards to mitigation strategies to reduce dust emissions, certainly the suspension component is a driver for wind erosion, and it behooves us to find management practices that will reduce this suspension component versus the saltation component to erosion. So with that, if anybody has any questions, be happy to try to answer them. Dre?
Yes.
The, you know, for the health concern, you mean?
Below PM10.
Oh, yeah. We didn't do this for this study, but the PM10 fraction is about 4% of our eroded material that comes off from the field. And of that, I believe it's right around 10% of that fraction. It's pretty small compared to the PM10. The interesting point, though, is if the EPA starts to regulate the coarse component, which is the 2.5 to 10, we have a paper out about 3 years ago that indicates that this region would exceed that standard about 15 to 20 times per year. And so that would be detrimental, actually, to this region if we adopted such a standard. So.
Well, as for the mitigation strategy, I'm wondering what kind of options available.
That's why we've been in this business for about 20 years, trying to identify what producers can do in terms of managing their soils better. And right now, NRCS actually is cost-shared with some of the growers and using an undercutter tool that disturbs the soil surface very little. And basically, it's just a wide sweep, a three-foot wide sweep that undercuts the soil, leaves all the residue standing. It's a very invasive type of tool. There was 40 of those sold throughout the Columbia Plateau, and I think about half of those are being used right now just because it's an art to use a 3 foot wide sweep going through the field. It's very difficult to manage that type of tillage tool. But yeah, it's a very much of a challenge.
Thank